Disclaimer. The views and opinions that you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on YouTube. Check out my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show! Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. It's good to be back. We've been gone for about a week. Mm-hmm. Extra week, rather 2 weeks, I guess. Yeah. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
Let us know if the sound mix is okay. I've been kind of messing with stuff, and XSplit needed me to install a bunch of new plugins and shit, so I don't know if everything's normal or what, but hopefully it is. Anyway, thanks for coming by. Thanks again to the live chat. Really appreciate it. Good to be back on the old YouTube. How's it going, Jacob?
Good. Pretty standard. Busy, because it's basically like convention season part deux.
Right, yeah. Now.
So, Crunchyroll Expo is next weekend, and then this weekend is Anime Fest, and the last weekend was Otakon, so busy.
Yeah, August, every single weekend has something.
Before the summer ends, they gotta cram in the extra cosplay.
Yeah, and we had a lot of work to do for all of those, pretty much. Although we're only really sending one person out to Anime Fest just to do interviews.
Right.
We have like six interviews stacked up at Anime Fest, and they asked us to have the questions translated into Japanese before we submitted them, which is an unusual request. It's not something I've never, ever been asked to do before.
No, but it's not common.
It's not really common, but it also means you got to prepare those questions like way in advance. So
I mean, it's a
peek inside the thrilling life of managing editorial coverage at a convention.
Right. It's also like it's not requested often, but it's also kind of a boon because it means you might get more time because there's less chance of like them misunderstanding a question or needing you to like rephrase it or whatever. Like, you know, when they're translated ahead of time, it's like, oh good, we'll get more questions answered, really.
Yeah, right. So hopefully it'll be good. I'm looking forward to that. The thing we have to talk about up front, obviously last week we were the victim of a pretty nasty hack. Someone walked off with our domain. It sucked a lot. They compromised a bunch of our Twitter accounts. You can read the entire story on the site. We're probably going to put that back on the front page again pretty soon. Important things to note are, if you're listening to this and for whatever reason haven't caught up on this, our new domain is animenewsnetwork.cc, www.animenewsnetwork.cc. The site is exactly the same. It is exactly as they didn't compromise
our servers.
Our servers are fine. So, the site's still going. That's a temporary domain. We're what's in the update? My boss Chris was very forthcoming about everything that had happened, and that's still pretty much the case. The process for getting a domain back is involved, and it's measured more in weeks rather than days, which is unfortunate. And honestly, it really sucks for us. Like during this period, it's pretty tough, but we'll be okay. We're hanging on. If you want to help us out, share the new domain. Please tell everybody there's a new domain. Here it is. Share things. Share articles on Twitter. We appreciate every... I mean, back pre-hack, we were really happy when people did that.
It was a big deal before.
It was a big deal before. Now it's an even bigger deal. So we appreciate that when you share it around. Mm-hmm. My Twitter account got nuked as part of all of this. My old Twitter account. So if you're, for whatever reason, you're wondering what happened to ANNZAC, I am now at ActionZaku, which I have to admit... I dramatically prefer that Twitter handle, and I'm not all that bummed out. But it's Action, ZACKU, like the Gundam, but with my name in it. Find me there. It'll take me years to rebuild that follower base, but that's fine. I'm very at peace with that whole thing. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye on the site, animenewsnetwork.cc. We're okay. We're in good shape, I think. Mm-hmm. My boss says he 100% expects to get the domain back, but right now we're just on a timeline that's, like I said, in a matter of weeks. We did manage to recover our anime Twitter handle. Right now we're trying to see if we can actually get the followers back, so... Yep. Fun times! That happened a day or two before I went to our nation's capital.
Oh, yeah.
The... the birthplace of American democracy, Washington, D.C., for a little convention called Otakon that I have not been to in, like...
3 years?
We went in 2013, so 4 years it's been.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. And that was back when it was in Baltimore. At this point, I think it's going to... They signed, like, a 4 or 5 year contract with Washington, D.C., so it's going to be there for quite a while. And honestly, the convention was great. Kudos to the Otakon guys. I know they were kind of sweating it, but they did a fantastic job. That convention can really grow in that space. And let me tell you, if you didn't go this year, maybe you missed out a little bit on the great year at Otakon when, like, nothing really, like, filled up, and, like, you could get into stuff you wanted. It wasn't empty, but you could get into stuff that you wanted to see easy. There's plenty of space to walk. The exhibitors hall has got nothing but space, like, and it wasn't an empty convention. It's just it was a huge convention center that they're meant to grow into,
right.
And those are the best years,
right.
When before it's wall to wall people, because in 3 years or whatever, Otakon, now that they have space to grow, because they didn't have any space to grow back in Baltimore, really, they had maxed that convention center
by the time I'm able to go. It's gonna be
yeah, by the time you're able to go,
they'd be like, oh, man.
Well, I mean, next year, even if they grow double digits, next year, if they double their attendance, it will be not half AX. But that place is big enough to hold, like, a Comic-Con-style convention. So, like, hundreds of thousands can fit in there. So, yeah, we'll see. But they did a great job. The convention was really good. I had a great time. I've never been to Washington, D.C. before in my life. And so I really took advantage and... like, my plane landed on Thursday night at, like, 4. And I got off the plane and was like, you know, these museums are open for, like, another 90 minutes. And I just ran down to the mall as fast as I could. My hotel was only, like, a mile away from the National Mall. So I went down to the National Mall and just crammed in museums. I, like, immediately went into the Museum of American History and immediately went into the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum and went down to the Capitol Hill and then went to the Washington Monument and Lincoln and I went to see the White House and all this. Yeah.
Booking it to a bunch of giant stone.
Yeah, that was about a five-hour span. And then the next morning I got up at 8 o'clock and ran right back down to go to the – I had, like, a few hours every morning, like, from about 8 to about 11:30 or so is when I had to be at the convention every day for work to do interviews and coordinate panel stuff and had some meetings and stuff like that. But I really crammed it in at the edges and I saw a tremendous amount of stuff in Washington, D.C. So the other reason to go to Otakon is that if you've never been to D.C. before or if you have been, it's been a while, whatever, like there's so much to do around there if you just want to see stuff. Like it is, it's like if it were in Anaheim right next to Disneyland. Not the same. I'm not suggesting that Washington, D.C. is like Disneyland because it is definitely not.
No.
It is definitely not incorrect. But there's a lot of stuff to do. There's a lot of things you can do.
Absolutely.
It's also very pretty there on the mall. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially, so I've been there twice. So that was in past, like a long time ago. But on two separate occasions, I went to D.C. And the thing I remember most is Magic Hour on the mall, like because it's so flat and the sunset is just like extremely picturesque, like that like 45 minutes to an hour span when the sun is going down on the National Mall is really like hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, but that's the thing I guess I remember the most.
Yeah, I got a bunch of really good photos from Magic Hour right around there, like of the sunset reflecting off the Capitol building and behind the sun setting behind the Lincoln Memorial and all of that stuff. So yeah, it was cool. You know, it was a little weird being there amid everything that was happening, but I was able to take a lot of it in, and it was a pretty big experience for me. But I spent plenty of time at the convention. I did a bunch of interviews. We didn't get any of them quite finished for this week, so you'll probably start seeing them on the site next week. I'm really excited to share. I did one with the screenwriter of Gundam Wing, Katsuyuki Sumisawa. And he was, like, the liveliest. They only gave me 15 minutes with him. And I tell you, I've been doing this for a long time, right? Like, I've been a journalist in the anime space for a long time. I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews in my time as a writing about anime. And this guy was, like, the most animated, like, the most fun. Like, and you rarely get a chance. They almost never give you writers. Like, you'll get the occasional impresario, like... Full Metal Alchemist guy, what's his name? The writer.
Sho Aikawa.
Right. Like, we'll talk to him, and, like, he directs shows and writes, you know, he just writes. Is he just a writer?
Yeah. It's just he's just written a lot and okay. been around a long time. Like, he was...
Well, he's one of the rare cases, then, where they'll actually give you just a writer.
Right, well, that's
But, like,
the thing.
Sometimes you get, like, a Shoji Kawamori, who directs and writes. Yeah. Okay, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. It was Sho Aikawa...
That's my example.
Well, okay, Shoji Kawamori, yeah, but the reason Sho Aikawa, like, he speaks more is just because, like, a lot of anime screenwriters, like, they came up through the boom... and they write, like, other people's material and stuff like that, and they're interested in continuing to get more material. Like, they're basically constantly looking for more material. They're more projects to work on. Sho Aikawa is, like, doesn't necessarily have to do more stuff now. He just does, because he's been writing since the OVA day, like, the 80s, late 80s OVAs. Like, that's how he started his thing. Yeah. So, like, now I guess he just doesn't really have to worry about it so much.
Well, this dude was... He's works on plenty of stuff, and, like, he... His filmography was long and had a lot of weird stuff in it. So, like, he wrote, like, most of Inuyasha and all of those Inuyasha movies that are all standalone.
Right.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask him, like, hey, what is that like? Like, you're stuck in... You're not allowed to move the story forward. Like, you can't move the actual story forward. So, like, how do you write that? Is that a challenge? You know, that kind of a thing. And I asked him for a Yoshiyuki Tomino story because he wrote 6 episodes of Brain Powered. Mm-hmm. And I got a great one.
Good.
So look forward to that. Yeah, it's good shit. I also spoke to the producer, again, the producer of Welcome to the Ballroom. So this time, I talked to these guys at Anime Expo, which is the premiere of Welcome to the Ballroom. And they were all a little more excited back then, I have to say. Back in July, they were all a little more excited back then. Yeah. But I spoke with the producer, and they also brought the kid who plays the main character, who this is like his first acting role. Mm-hmm. He gave me really, really long answers to everything. It was great. Like, yeah. I was really happy that he was so into giving the interview. He gave me really, like, he thought about his answers for a long time. It was good. Mm-hmm. I didn't bring up the angle that a lot of people are talking about on Welcome to the Ballroom. And, like, I came back to read a This Week in Anime where you were talking about it. Now, I have not been keeping up with the show. I kind of decided, like, well, I guess I'll wait. Maybe I'll see how it goes, and if people tell me it gets better. But I have not read anything really positive about the manga getting better at all. So, like, what's going on with that show?
Well, I mean, so it's twofold. There's the thing, I think we talked about this in the previous podcast, so I won't go too much into it. Or maybe we didn't, I don't know. But there's twofold, like, the direction isn't really poppin'. It's like it's really well animated, but there's a... being an animator, even a really good animator or an animation director, is a completely different skill set with just like a little bit of overlap to being a director, to managing a large team of people with different skill sets and thinking in cinematic language, being a really good storyboarder. Like, if somebody has all those skills, that's super, but they are two different skill sets.
Yeah.
And Welcome to the Ballroom comes across as like, oh, this is made by somebody who's like an animation director but doesn't really know cinematic language very well. Like, the editing is weird, the timing is weird, the pacing is weird. It's just, and it's not, it's kind of flat. That's one thing. But the more pertinent thing that a lot of people, like people who just want a deep dive might talk about that, but on a more surface level, just for a sort of a mass audience trying to watch a thing, it's just really mean-spirited. It's really mean-spirited and, like, misogynist.
And that's what's turning people off, right?
As far as I can tell, like, so I can't really speak for everybody. I just kind of follow, like, some subreddits in our forums. But the talkback that I've seen for subreddits in our forums, I should probably look at, like, Crunchyroll forums as well. Maybe that would help. But, like, I don't know. Like, maybe it wouldn't, because Crunchyroll forums, for any given show, it's going to be more positive. I don't know. Like, a lot of what people are saying is like, oh, I don't like it. So even the people, let's say there are people that come into our forums and they're like, I don't like it when you guys make things political. You know, that's not great. We don't really like that sort of discourse. But when people who come in that like, trying to make this political, they come into the Welcome to Ballroom forums and they're like, normally I would say stop trying to make this political, but I can't stand the way that these women are being characterized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they straight up are objects. The main female character in the show, like the conflict right now is over who's going to be her permanent dance partner. And in the last episode where that conflict kind of comes to a boil, she has not a single line. She doesn't even have a spoken line about what's happening, based around her and stuff like that. And in general, like they treat the leading and following in dance as if the leader is just like puppeting the girl, and she doesn't have to have any dance skill, basically. Even though they emphasize, oh, she's a talented dancer, but then when it comes to the actual dancing, like, the girl just acts like she doesn't know what's happening as the guy, like, whips her around the floor as if it's entirely his responsibility. And sexual politics in it are just weird, but even if you wanted to ignore the sexual divide in it, it's just sort of mean-spirited. It doesn't seem like they enjoy dancing. It seems like dancing is, like, some kind of weird contest of, like, who's the most, like, sparkling, popular, dominant person. It's not really about loving the dance for its own sake at all. All of it's a competition at all
times. That's laid out in the first episode.
He's not, like, the
character is drawn to it for because the it's look that whole look at me thing.
Right.
That's why he's drawn to it. It's not, like, super inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very inspiring. I want to be like the figure skater, not because, like, I admire their athletic prowess or I admire the dedication it takes. Mm-hmm. I just want everyone to fucking look at me. It's kind of like...
Well, that's okay. That's okay as a motive at first, but then you
it
would
should
expect,
grow into something more than that.
Yeah,
you know?
It should grow into something more than that. Or, like, the way that most sports anime succeed, at least especially if it's a performance-based sport, which this is that there's no one answer. Everybody has a different answer to why they're drawn to ballroom dance. Like, maybe this person is the athleticism, this person is an artistic expression, this person is the popularity, this person is just the beautiful costumes, something. But all of them seem to have the same motive, which is, I want the girls to, like, fall in lockstep with me, and I want to demand the attention of the audience, and I want to dominate. It's this weird fucking machismo driven story, which I don't think people were really expecting coming into.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, it's unpleasant, and it's mean-spirited, and nobody seems to like each other, and you're not really learning about the art of ballroom dance. It's weird, is what I'm saying. And, like, and everything else, like, you really kind of want to like it, because it looks so good, and the music is good when there is music. There's oftentimes not enough music, in my opinion, but, like, the problem is just, it's just really hard to like this kind of cast, this kind of dynamic. And so it's kind of, I don't know, it's weird. It's definitely not what I was expecting that show to become. But I see a lot of complaints. And people are saying in the chat, like, oh, I go to places where it's all positive. You can go to that for almost any show. You can go to places where, in another world with my smartphone, it's all positive. Like, and that's the hubs for people who are really into that show. So I'm trying to expand this to, like, groups and places I've looked where people are just talking about general anime watching habits, and this one's coming out pretty lukewarm.
In our rankings,
it's dead in the middle.
If you want to look at our rankings, if you want to look at, like, review traffic,
right,
which is not strong for a Welcome to the Ballroom, mm-hmm. You want to look at disc sales.
Oh, God.
They're not... Maybe don't look at
maybe
the disc
don't,
sales.
Don't look at those. Don't look at that. Those are not good right now.
Yeah. You know, I asked the producer while he was there. He said... I said, you know, how's it been going? What episodes are you working on right now? And he said that they've got the first 16, like, nailed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they nailed the first 16. They've got another, 24? So they've got another 8 left after that. Mm-hmm. And he said that's where they're running into a thing where they're like, well, how do we give 200%? We've been giving 150%. How do we give 200% past this? Because he's really proud of some of the stuff that comes up in the later episodes. But he was telling me that he had a lot of praise for Yuri on Ice and how they planned out the show to where the animation would sort of crescendo closer to the end, mm-hmm. so that they had maybe some tricks up their sleeve for the end and could show you something new near the end.
Mm-hmm.
He was sort of praising the way they planned it out, even though that show is sort of famous for being
stretched a
little too thin. He was still saying, like, well, but... They show you something new at the end of Yuri on Ice. Like, he was like, well, you know, I, at this point, we're like, how do we break through past what we've already been doing? So yeah, it's a pretty good interview. He seemed very tired. But I asked him specifically, I said, like, hey, do you want to, would you have preferred to have done this as 12 and 12?
Uh-huh.
Would you have rather had a break in between the two? And he said, no. Because once you get the momentum going, you don't want to break it up. Like, the way, and that's, to me, that said something about the state of production right now, where there's so much production happening and these teams can get split apart and pulled back together and split apart and splintered in so many different ways. Or if you're really happy with a group that you have working together,
yeah,
and that ends, those guys are going to immediately vanish because they're in such high demand,
yeah,
and you're not going to be able to get them back together again. So it made a lot of, it was an interesting angle that I hadn't really thought about.
Well, the animation
but
director,
you must, yeah, yeah.
The animation director of My Hero Academia said the same thing when I asked him about that. He said, oh, I would prefer we just keep going. He says, but I know that we're able to do the things that we are because we take the breaks. But he said, but for momentum's sake, it is a little bit of a like darn, sort of like a hiccup when you have to stop production. He said, but I understand it's necessary for us to be able to make episodes like the really jaw dropping ones you see in My Hero Academia right now, only because they took the break. But he said it's not great for momentum.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It's devil's bargain, I guess.
But yeah, I'm interested to watch, because you know we'll be covering this show into next year, right? It'll wrap up around at the end of the.
It shouldn't be next year. It should end by the end of this year.
What episode is it on right now?
It'll just end when all of the slightly before a lot of the fall shows do, because it's halfway through its run right now. It'll end before winter.
It started in the summer. It's going to be two seasons.
Yeah.
So it'll be summer and fall.
Yes. But it won't go into 2018.
Right before.
Yeah.
Because Preview Guide January is usually like second week of January.
It'll probably end like the second week of December.
But most of the year. So we'll be covering it for the rest of the year.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
There's actually a lot of two-core shows this summer.
Yeah.
So that's a little surprising.
Yeah.
I don't know how many we'll continue to cover, but, you know.
We'll see.
Like, unless I'm crazy. Like, fall, for one thing, fall is, like, loaded with new interest stuff. It's like spring, whereas summer is
plus we get the summer hits in the fall, right? Because isn't that when Netflix is putting a lot of this stuff out?
Yeah. Well, those won't affect
it.
It'll be a glut.
Great.
We're not getting Kakigurui until...
We will take it. This summer is a fucking drought.
And absolutely. And, well, that's the thing. We're not going to get Kakigurui until 2018. So, bummer.
So we get it in 2018.
Fate Apocrypha, they're dropping in November, so...
Cool. I saw somebody with the username Fate2pocrypha and thought that was A+.
That's really good.
Congratulations, whoever you are.
Golf clap.
So the other thing I wanted to mention, if you haven't seen it yet, it's opening. I wish I had looked this information up, but it is opening soon. They did a bunch of showings of In This Corner of the World at Otakon. They showed the dub, and I had some buddies go in who saw the dub version. It was weird. So one day they had the day before Friday they showed the dub with no cast or anybody else there. Saturday they had the like big screening with like Maruyama and like the other producers who were in attendance at the show there to introduce the film and give a Q&A afterward. But it was Saturday after they'd shown it once already in English. And like, first of all, now I feel like my stance on this is fairly well known. Like, if this is a movie about Japanese people,
I'm right with you.
I just want to see it in Japanese, and I have to be honest with you, I cannot even imagine watching that movie in English. I can't imagine it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm extremely pro-dub, like very pro-dub.
Way more than me.
However, that is like my line, is when something is really, really Japanese in nature, like historically or culturally, like very much so. I don't mean like Naruto, I mean like In This Corner of the World. I find it hard to imagine watching it in English.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. But they said that the dub was also maybe not so good. So it was a little stilted. So
what else is new?
Well, I don't know who dubbed it. I have not seen it for myself. I'm just telling you, word of mouth was maybe stick to the Japanese track. But if it is playing near you, take a deep breath, prepare yourself, and go see that movie, because holy shit.
So, on the note, yeah.
That should be on the poster, ... because holy shit, and then my name.
It's extremely good. One of the best World War II in Japan movies you will ever see, I would say.
I mean, I would put it on best World War II movies I've seen. Period.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that too. I was specifically, like, if you're talking, Grave of the Fireflies, it is on par with Grave of the Fireflies, I would say. Like, if you're like, oh, that's among the best about this. It is a completely different movie with a completely different focus. It's not repeating ideas, but it is on a par. It is an excellent movie.
I like it. I like it more than Grave of the Fireflies, just because it's about survivors, and like that is I do have a preference for an uplifting, more of an uplifting thing. And this movie is deeply, deeply sad, and you get all those feelings, but the ending is more about. And they continued on anyway, you know. Like,
I think Grave of the Fireflies is more appropriate for the '80s, for the late '80s in Japan.
Yes,
because of the culture of the time.
Yeah.
While this is, you know, things are not as decadent and hedonistic as they were in the '80s.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to have a more positive.
You know. You don't got to double feature it with
Totoro.
Yeah.
blindside them.
Yeah.
What's funny about that to me is that the double features, like, it depending on what theater you go to, is which one they showed first.
Yeah.
It's like a roll of the
dice.
Crash
your fingers.
Yeah.
Which one we getting first? let's see here. So, yeah, that is definitely worth seeing. Well, so should we move on to summer anime? I have not. I watched episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Made in Abyss. Mm-hmm. And, well.
They haven't dropped that shoe yet,
have they? It's good. Yeah, right. Like, we were talking about this earlier. We were like, well, there's nothing really to say. Like, it's good. It's still really compelling. I want to know what happens and everything. But the shoe has not dropped. Whatever the shoe is, it hasn't dropped. I don't really even have any theories because, like, they're going to tell me in a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to theory craft about why.
Right.
Why exactly, what's exactly going on with her mom and what's going on with the kid and his relic armor and all of that shit.
Yeah, it's like I just kind of want this to unfold naturally, and I want to kind of stew in the atmosphere they created, because most of that show's appeal. It, like, the story is good and all, but the story is walking at this pace.
Yeah.
Not that it's ever boring, because most of that is just, it's like an encyclopedic, like, marinating in the world that they've built.
It's a travelogue.
It's a travelogue, there.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a travelogue through hell, but it is a travelogue. Like, it's 100% this is a Dante's Inferno, except it's more pretty, you know,
yeah,
sort of situation. It's like, oh, look at the beauty of this, like, giant, nasty, what are the white Ava eaters in End of Evangelion called?
Oh, the mass production units?
Yeah, it's like a more organic version of the mass production units that are, like, eating somebody, and then they, like, they call out whatever that person's last words were, like, help me, or, like, oh, God, my organs, or whatever, so somebody will come, and then they can eat them, too. Like, it's just, it's, like, haunting and really pretty, but fucked up.
Too many little kid nudity jokes. Too many.
Apparently, they are framed as, like, sexual in the manga. They're not framed that way in the anime, but, you know.
There's enough of it to make me go, well, I know where that's from.
Yeah.
And it's too much for me. But it's not so much as to be distracting.
Yeah,
so
just watch
okay.
The anime, if you know what I'm saying. From what I've heard, just watch the anime. Don't read the source material.
It's not the abyss I thought I was sinking into.
No, exactly.
I didn't really get a chance. I watched the first episode of Gamers, which I'm pretty sure you told me it was not where it got good. It was okay.
It's okay. As it goes.
Does it get better as it goes along?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give it another couple.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of generic to me. It was pleasant. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it had a really funny joke where she was talking about how, like, everybody speaks really politely to me, even King Koopa. Mm-hmm. In Super Mario, and it had, like, different dialogue in the box for her. That was funny. That was a funny joke.
Right.
And, like, it did seem like it had a good sense of humor, mm-hmm. but it reminded me of, like, a... Like, the beginning, it reminded me a little of, like, Ken Akamatsu type. Just a little bit. I think it was just, like, premium girl, she's blonde, and all the key art, she's in a bikini, and it's very archy kind of,
It's more archy, you know? Comics, like, it's not, there aren't any fan service jokes or anything. Like, as
but
it goes,
but,
it's still not
but I mean, tone-wise.
Right.
Not like Ken Akamatsu style fan service or creep factor, but, like, tone wise, it just kind of reminded me of that kind of thing right up front, and not like an exemplary example of one of those, just like a pretty okay one. So I'll watch more of it and see what's right. up.
As it's gone, so the thing it reminds me of, so this might be a turnoff for you, is like it's a less cartoony. It doesn't have the Bugs Bunny style jokes that this property indulged. But apart from that, the tone wise is 100% School Rumble.
Did you say a fart from that?
Apart from that.
You just said a fart from that.
I did? I thought I said a part. Look, I slur a little bit. I'm a nerd.
The chat can validate me.
I'm a nerd. I slur a bit. But apart from that, it's more like School Rumble, but except if all the characters were into video games. So, but it's the same thing of, like, everybody's mistaken about who's in a relationship with who, etc. But not in a lame way, because I think it's Ken Akamatsu does that, but it's in a lame way where it's like, okay, I know the joke 10 minutes before it happens, and then it happens, it's the world's most predictable joke. In School Rumble and in Gamers, like, it's not really predictable, it's very fast, you have to be really paying attention to who's mistaken about what at all times.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, but yeah, like, it's it's not an amazing show or anything. It's just the summer is so empty that I'm like, oh, good sense of humor. Like,
which I totally felt that. Mm-hmm. Like, as I was sitting there watching it, I was like, oh, this is kind of like, well, it's summertime on a Sunday. It looks like there's another episode of Gamers to waft through.
Well, and the characters, I mean, like this. So here's the thing. This does make, so this is a sort of a paradox, where the more an anime-style character, especially if it's not a super well-animated show like this, like, there's nice cuts of animation in this, there's effort, but they're working definitely with limited resources. But the characters are not anime stereotypes, there's no cheesecake, there's no wacky over-the-top, and she's actually the heiress to a blah blah blah, you know, or she's a...
actually, you know, an heiress should just be its own genre.
Actually an heiress to it. There's no wacky things like that. It's just, they're just, like, people. They don't really have wacky over-the-top characterizations or anything like that. So that's appealing, but at the same time, you get why, like, it doesn't draw more people in, because it doesn't have any of the wacky anime things. It's like, oh, I could just see this being a group of people that are, you know... Sometimes the characterization of the comedy is cartoony. Like, there's wacky things that, like, wacky facial expressions and, like, how do I put this? Like, animation things that, like, remind you this is a cartoon. But the characters' personalities are just, like, a person. They're not, like, they're not anime stereotypes. So that could make it more boring, I think, for some people. But at the same time, it's more enjoyable for me. But I see why it would entice people less, because there's not any of that anime aspect to it. It's just, here's a bunch of video game fans who are caught in a love quadrangle heptagon.
No, you know? It seems fine.
Yeah.
It seems fine. I'll definitely...
Everybody's shouting, Jacob said fart. I said
you
fart,
did.
Okay? God. Fart, 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 farty McFart.
See how
fart.
Much evidence it took to convince you
farty
were wrong?
Farty McFartson. Fartberg and Fartland.
This podcast is rated M for mature. Let's see here. Well, before we move on to Twitter questions, this is probably going to be kind of a short show.
I wanted to talk about My Hero Academia.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
So, summer anime kind of blah, but thankfully we have a spring anime that's, like, continuing on, because My Hero Academia, so I'm going to come full disclosure as much as I've conducted, like, now 2 or 3 interviews about the property at, like, AX and stuff like that, and I felt bad because, like, I like it, it's charming and all, but, like, I really wasn't into My Hero Academia as of the first season. It was like, this is fine. This is, like, extremely sort of by-the-book-ish. So there's, I think, 2 different types of by-the-book shonen. There's by-the-book shonen that's, like, more Naruto-esque, that's a little more archetypal, and aimed a little more at teenagers. And then there's by-the-book shonen that's aimed a little more at families, and so it's a little more Disney-fied. It's like One Piece, I guess. So... Well, One Piece has the giant boobs jokes and stuff like that. It has the more sexual aspect to
it. All those properties age with their audiences.
They do, but, like, I don't know. I think of One Piece as more of a family thing, and a lot of the more specific Shonen Jump things is a little more teeny, like Bleach. I don't know. There's a strategy.
One Piece is a broader success.
Right.
And maybe it started out being aimed a little younger, but it's aged with its audience very much. Mm. I don't know. It's hard to qualify this stuff.
It is really hard to qualify this stuff, but I'm saying...
You're characterizing My Hero Academia as edging towards the younger spectrum of Shonen Jump readers.
Yes, and in terms of appeal, in that it's about more like... Oh, it's not about as, like, emotionally complex things. It's more about, like... platitudes about, like, heroism and optimism and friends and teamwork and stuff like that. It's not really interested in, like, and this guy's family, he came from, like, it's not Hunter Hunter where it's like, and this guy came from a cult of assassins. Like, it's not like that. It's just sort of like, these are the heroes in your neighborhood, you know? And, but it was good. I was just like, oh, I can't really get into this. But season 2 completely reversed that. It has continued to completely reverse that. It's where I was like, oh, this is why people love this so much. Because the material is... It's coming closer to a personal place, I guess, whereas before it was like, okay, here's the shonen beats, here's kind of a really, really compelling art style, but not much more personal to grip onto. And then it feels like in season 2 it's really getting into what the author wants to talk about vis-a-vis, like, bad relationships of family and with legacy and with, like, heroism as a job versus heroism as an ideal. Which are 2 very different things. Like, if you live in a world where everybody's kind of has superhero powers and hero is a job that you can take on, there are different ways to go about that job. Do you make yourself sort of an ideologue like All Might, or do you just see it as a profession? And you know, I don't know. It's interesting. So But the whole point of that is that in comparing those two things, in hero as ideologue versus hero as this is just a job that I do, if you attach your own weird ideals as to how it should be performed, that's on you, friendo, came to a head in this character named Stain, who is really interesting. Like, all of the characters have this really interesting visual kind of design to them, but Stain is especially, like, creepy looking because he has no nose, and his eyes are really big, and his teeth are, like, he has, like, Soul Eater monster teeth, like, the design of all the villains and a lot of the heroes in Soul Eater is that they have, like, these big, flat, like, cow teeth where it goes way past, like, the ear when they smile. It's just, you know, they slobber a lot and stuff like that. I don't know. He's very frightening looking. And his whole thing is that he's a fan of heroes, kind of, but he's a hero killer because he kills any hero that he feels is working for big business or, like, only in it for themselves or is otherwise not the pure ideal of what a hero should be. Which isn't necessarily a revolutionary thing in and of itself, but the interesting thing to me was that this show, which I've seen so many anime try to take on the idea of internet radicalization and fail, and this show, like, through this character of Stain, got internet radicalization, like, 1,000% correct. And it's writing for, like, an audience of, like, 8 to 13-year-olds, and it got it, which is that once Stain is taken down and brought into custody, because, you know, he's just a crazy person who's killing heroes, it's not like he's a big, deep, dark nemesis, he's on his own, they bring him into custody, but they can't report on, like, who took him down, because the people who took him down are students, and legally speaking, students aren't supposed to be using their powers in public, and it was just this sort of red tape fiasco, so they pin it on some other hero having brought him in, and most of the media coverage is just on him as a person, why he did this, what his philosophy is, and so they give, like, an obscene amount of airtime and spinning, like, theories and stuff like that as to why the hero killer did what he did. And in doing this, like, they open up this big pit of people have with dissatisfaction of heroes and how they do their jobs, and they accidentally sort of radicalize the youth of the country. Anybody who's like, yeah, screw heroes, anti-establishment, you know, just a lot of those teenage emotions, and they inadvertently push them into becoming villains and seeking out villain organizations who might help them, like, fight back against the man in a way that they don't really realize is, you know, is accurate to life. And so it was like, oh, that is 100%, like, very true to somehow how some incidences of radicalizing youth through social media have worked, which is interesting to me because there's a lot of anime that get that wrong and they're like aimed at adults. Like I said, would say Terror in Resonance didn't get that right. Like Catchmen Crowds didn't really get that right for my money. And then like, so to see like this family based show take on these kind of complex social issues and present them just very cleanly, very realistically was just really cool. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where My Hero Academia goes now that it's become clearer that it's more about, like, life in Japan and modern life, except with superheroes on top of it. It's not just, you know, it's not a superheroic show. It's just like, oh, this is normal societal problems. We just added superpowers to it. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting. So that was a long spiel, but, like, My Hero Academia is really good. If the first season put you off because it was a little bit generic, like, you should watch it now because it's really smart and well-animated and compelling. So, yeah.
It's next on my list.
Yeah.
That's literally the next thing on my list of things to watch is that show. I'm going to catch up and watch the rest of the season as it airs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to mention very briefly, I got a chance to look at the Record of Lotus War Blu-ray box for my fellow olds out there, and only the OVA is on the Blu-ray. The garbage TV show is on DVD.
Yeah.
The TV show has a really hilarious dub. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun blast from the past, but the OVA looks great. So if you wanted that show on Blu-ray, it's worth picking up.
Mm-hmm.
Although I really did think for whatever reason that they had put Record of Lotus War TV on Blu-ray, but then realized, like, of course nobody's remastered that. Like, of course no one spent the money to remaster that piece of shit. Like,
a warrior has no need for beauty.
Yeah, right. Oh, jeez.
That dub is super good.
Man.
super bad, I mean. But,
and then I've been playing Sonic Mania, which I was a little down on, because I was like, wait, this is, like, just a Genesis game.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. And they actually, I played it for like an hour, and after I played it for like an hour, I was like, this is exactly like playing a good Sonic the Hedgehog game. Oh, they finally made another one of these,
right,
where it felt like, it's not as good as like Sonic the Hedgehog 2, but that's like an all-time, you know, classic platformer. Like, easily the best of that series. Why would you ever play any other Sonic the Hedgehog game? You know, that kind of thing. But I was really intrigued by the fact that they tried so hard to nail the exact aesthetic and get the exact control and sound and everything down and finally make some. Yeah, it's good. I mean, and our friend of the show, Brady Hardall, worked really fucking hard on the intro animation, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying that because he's my friend. They nailed it with that thing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's really good. It's cool. And I recommend checking it out.
Nifty. So how many years did it take them to make a good Sonic game in the vein of...
Well, when did Sonic 2 come out? Like 1994 or something like that. So
20 years.
Yeah, something 20-something years. Anyway, I think that about does it for our usual topics. You want to take some Twitter questions?
Sounds good.
We got a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Overdouble wants to know, how do AX and Otakon compare? They don't. They don't.
Very different.
Anime Expo is closer in experience to San Diego Comic-Con, which is over 100,000 people. At that level, you're getting a dramatically different experience. It is a lot more anonymous. It's a lot more stressful in terms of like getting into what you want to see. There's a lot more long lines, you know, that kind of thing. I think Jacob is getting ready to show. Yeah, okay.
Can you see it?
Yeah, actually, you can. You can see it. She's sleeping at the base of the fan that's next to to Jacob's feet there. Anyway, Otakon is chill. It is, I think they said, I didn't see the exact attendance number, but it was in the low 20,000s. You can get into everything that you want to see, and it's, like, there are different reasons to go to one. Anime Expo feels like the center of the anime industry, and it's 100% worth going to. Mm-hmm. Otakon is much more the laid-back, traditional convention experience, and they get some great guests, and it's a really good time. So, you know... pick which one of those experiences you'd rather have, I guess, or try them both. Like, I recommend them both. Like, if you want the full experience, you should see both at some point in your life. Okay. King of Anime wants to know.
Your King Honor. Of Anime? My liege.
Your Excellency. Are you guys going to buy that Your Name Collector's Edition? They'd probably send us one in the mail, maybe.
Might send us the standard.
Yeah, well, even if we get that. I'm not going to buy that. I probably would just get the standard edition. I just want the movie at this point. I'd like to see it again.
Mm-hmm. I have to look at what's in that. But, I mean,
I don't know what's in it.
Yeah, I've forgotten, so...
I feel like I'm done buying collector's editions of anything.
If it's shaped good, I would, you know.
Shaped good?
Shape. If it's not,
what does that mean?
It's not in a ludicrous, unshelvable shape.
If it's just like a thicker than usual box?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
You know, unless it's ridiculous.
Like, I assume it's going to come in a giant stand and like you have to take the Comet off the stand and open it to get the Blu-ray out. And there's like plates in there and it rattles around when you try and like put the meteor back on. Like that's what I'm expecting.
Right. You think it's a case with a meteor on top?
No, it's not. It's not. But that's what I think of when I think like limited edition collectors. Yeah. Like the Speed Racer thing that's going around, the giant Speed Racer head. Yeah.
Crack open Speed's head.
If you want to see something similar, there is a Planet of the Apes collector's box set that is the head of Cornelius.
Yeah.
Why they made it fucking Cornelius, I don't know. Why wouldn't you make it Dr. Zaius?
I mean, he's the bad guy.
You're going to buy a planet. You love Planet of the Apes much that you're going to buy a giant head full of Planet of the Apes movies. Uh-huh. Whose head do you want that to be?
I understand. Well, also apes,
Dr. Zaius.
But also
not Cornelius.
But also when people think of the apes, they think of the chimpanzee. They don't think of the orangutan types.
I'll tell you what they think of. Dr. Zaius.
Yes.
That's who they think of.
Yeah.
Anyway. let's see here. David Baker wants to know, what do you think has been the best year for anime since Akira was released stateside?
The fuck?
Okay, that's an impossible question to answer. However, the last probably 5 years have been better for anime than the previous 15, so right. I would say that is my blanket answer. The last 5 years have been stronger for the industry as a whole than the previous 15 or so, 20 before that. Yeah. Someone in the chat says 2007.
Oh, jeez.
Nope. No, sir.
Sound of a plane. I'm not a good sound effects mouth person, but like, beep.
Wandering Dreamer wants to know, what is your biggest disappointment in the summer anime season so far? Not being able to cover Fate as it airs.
And Kakegurui, both of those.
Whatever.
Both of those are, like, I think more high profile than anything else.
Yeah, dude, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in terms of content, Ballroom. I did not expect that to be that.
Yeah, sure, there you
watch.
Go, Ballroom.
It's like, whoa, what the hell? I didn't expect this to be this mean and weird.
Ford DM asks, now that it's wrapped, what's your impression of the Monogatari franchise? Jacob?
I don't think I should talk about it. Because I hate it.
I'm rolling my eyes at you.
I hate it with a passion. I've only seen the first season of Bakemonogatari. But that, by itself, I detested deeply.
I have not watched it. I have been told. So, people who I trust, not just you, not just Jacob.
Right. I haven't really talked to Zach about that much.
People who I very much trust, people who I feel have my best interests in mind, have come to me and said, Zach, don't watch Monogatari. Don't watch it. And I said, okay, all right, I won't, because I trust them. What am I going to do, betray them? Why are you asking me to betray my friends?
Jeez. No, I can't say that I'm glad that I saw it, but I
have no opinion because I haven't seen it.
I mean, I guess I am glad that I saw it because, like, I feel like it is, like, it's not really popular in the West, but it is, the people who like it, like, really want to talk about it. And so I'm glad that I saw it just so I can have, so those people can dismiss me because I can say I hate almost every part of it. I hate almost every single aspect, every single frame of it. However,
We should get off of this subject.
I'm not sure I've ever hated an anime quite as deeply. And that doesn't mean it's the worst anime I've ever seen. It just means it's the one I personally loathe the most. It's not even close to the worst. It's fine in many regards. I just hate it. There's a difference between it being bad and me hating it.
All right.
Anyway.
There's enough negativity in the world.
So that's why I was like, I can't really talk about it. It makes me very angry.
Chris Matsu wants to know, we're celebrating 10 years since Gurren Lagann this year. Feels like 10 years since we recorded that podcast. And I was wondering, what?
You're right. I agree.
10 years.
Approval.
10 years of Gurren Lagann. What other 2007 anime do you feel have endured?
2007.
What else 2007? Death Note, right?
Yeah.
Or was that 2006?
That was 6. I mean, it's long, so it ran into 2007.
What else came out in 2007?
I'm bad at remembering years attached.
Look it up, and we'll ask. We'll go to the next question.
Hang on, I'm just gonna.
You can look it up.
You do that. I'll.
Okay, Hecka Jeff wants to know. It's a good name, Hecka Jeff.
Bakano.
Aged okay.
Yeah, it's a good one. Geez, so many things. I mean, those are the most notable ones. Those three.
But that's it.
It was 2007. In case you've forgotten, so it's Bishojo adaptations as far as the eye can see, and a lot of failed weird stuff. I never saw Denno Coil.
I need to see that. That finally came out. I should buy that.
I didn't really get deep into Mononoke. That's the other one. But those
I didn't get into
ones.
That either.
Yeah, but no, 2007 is. I think like somebody asked you what was the best year since Akira came out. Like. It's hard to say, but like I feel like if somebody asked me to pick a worst year, it would be easy to say 2007 or 2008.
Really?
Because
those were bad years.
They were bad years for production, like as far as memorable things that came out, as far as like what
the
was
the chat is really excited about Lucky Star.
Lucky Star was, you know, Lucky Star isn't in this list of 2007.
Do you know what I fucking hate?
What?
The Lucky Star opening.
I buy sausage.
Stop it. I hate it so much.
Why do you hate it so much? Because it just... Cause
the sign just drives me crazy. I don't know what it is. It's like nails
it's
on a
annoying.
Chalkboard.
It's pretty annoying.
I don't know why.
I've heard so many of those Moe Girl songs, though.
It's
not the worst that I've heard, but it's... yeah, it's pretty annoying.
I can't stand that intro. All I have to hear it and I go, ah! Like, I don't even dislike Lucky Star particularly. Like,
I do, God.
It's not funny, me. But, like, it's whatever. It's inoffensive. Whatever. It can exist.
I guess.
What?
I think it's like.
There's
it's,
enough negativity in the
it's
world,
so
Jacob.
Lazy, it's almost offensive to me.
It was a long time ago.
It was. I know. But it did start a trend. It started a trend that still exists.
Is it even fucking possible to eat one of those chocolate croissants without thinking about Lucky Star? No, it's not.
See, that's offensive.
Impossible.
That's offensive, then.
You cannot eat one of those chocolate croissants without thinking about
it. They ruined a beautiful pastry, so that is offensive.
I'm not upset when I think about it. Someone in the chat mentions caramel dancing. Well, we're just heading down the vortex of time here. We should move
late
on.
Late 2000s, God.
2007. Yeesh. Oof. Okay. Yeah. We've got a 10th anniversary article on Girl and the Gang going up pretty soon.
Yep.
Golden Pell wants to know, Hecka Jeff, at the Discotech panel, they said they aspired to be the Criterion of anime. Given that claim, what would you like to see them release?
I just want to point out that they made that claim right before announcing Benenya.
With Mike Toole as the narrator.
Which is fantastic.
Congratulations, Mike. Yay. That's so great.
It is a really, really good choice.
I cannot wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good. Mike is like a born narrator.
Yeah.
I hope he gets like a ton of voice work. Everyone hire Mike for your narrator roles. Going to be awesome.
Right.
Anyway, Criterion of anime, what would you like to them to release? Like in a nice like Criterion. Imagine that they, let's say, perfect world. They have access to the entire production materials. They can get whatever they want. They can even give you like a good, like somehow they have a magic process that can make digital animation from the early 2000s look good on Blu-ray. Like somehow magically they have this.
Jeez.
What would you want them to release?
I don't know. It's hard for me to react to that. Like, I mean, like, I just want Satoshi Kon's movies to get a better release. Because they've gotten...
That's kind of the easy,
pretty,
like...
Well, it's an easy response, but, like, it's true. Like, historically, his movies have been licensed by completely different companies. They're out of print, and they weren't very good releases. Some of them were window-boxed, and, like, yeah, that's kind of unfortunate.
It's a little obscure. I don't know if they could get the rights to it. But if they could get this show called Neon Genesis Evangelion... I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Well, if you've ever heard of Revolutionary Girl Utainment,
oh jeez,
I might want that on Criterion. I mean, like, that's the thing. Right Stuff's release, that would be an easy response. But Right Stuff's releases were actually pretty thorough, so, you know, I'm looking forward to the Blu-ray.
Yeah, right, they're really thorough, but, like, seriously, like, I can't, if somebody did, like, a Criterion-style End of Evangelion that actually had special features on it, that would be fucking amazing.
I love that they promoted that as, and the Blu-ray as well will have, it's like, oh, it's a director's cut with new animation, and the new animation in Utena TV is, well, they put bodies in the coffins for the Black Rose arc, which I do think is kind of important. That's not really new animation, they just put the bodies in there, which was apparently only a content thing. But the new animation they added is just an extra shot of Toga stroking Akio's car. That's it. It's 3 seconds long, and he just does this. And they're like, new animation!
Justifies the 498,000 yen price. yeah, well, let's see. What else? I mean, I would like to get, like, Pat Labor 2... you know, the classics would be nice to have in a Criterion style treatment, but a lot of those discs are already pretty good. You know, they've got on there what they can get.
Right.
Let's see. That's a good question. I'm gonna have to think about it because I have a lot of my favorite stuff like Space Adventure Cobra. Mm. I mean, so like, okay, Interstellar 5555.
Yeah, they fucked that up.
The Blu-ray is horrible for that. But I'm not even sure what other special features exist. If the magic process I was just talking about somehow existed, then yeah, of course. But like...
That movie was digital?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The DVD looks better than the Blu-ray. Mm. It's like 480p max resolution. Like, and like we're lucky it's not interlaced.
Yeah.
It's bad news. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Let's see.
I just can't remember how old it is, if it was Cell or not, but I guess...
It's old. It's not that old, though. It's like 2003? Whenever Discovery came out, so 2002 or 2003.
Right, so like the latest you could assume something was animated on cells is like 01, maybe?
Yeah, oh yeah. All right, Invalid Name wants to know, what are your thoughts and expectations for Crunchyroll Expo? Well, we're going. If you are going to Crunchyroll Expo, we will be there next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Santa Clara Convention Center in San Jose, California, right next to Six Flags Great America. Which I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. We'll be there. They have a mountain of guests. We're going to do a bunch of interviews, hopefully. And I was contacted about being on some panels, but I have no idea what's happening with that. Well, maybe we'll be on some panels. If we are, you'll find out on my Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll be up there. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good time.
Absolutely.
My expectations are, like, relatively...
First year of a con?
It's the first year of a convention. So I'm really excited to see. I bet they've put on a pretty good show. So we'll see. It'll be fun. Okay. Andrew Nas Anime wants to know, did you get to any industry or fan panels at Otakon this year? If so, how were they? I was at the Crunchyroll panel, which was a normal Crunchyroll panel. And then, you know, two-thirds or three-quarters full and lots of questions. Mm-hmm. And they had a very good representative up there doing her job. And it was a pretty normal thing. I went to Daryl Surratt's Craziest Anime Deaths panel, which was packed to the gills with rowdy otaku. And it's the perfect convention experience. I highly recommend any of Daryl's panels. If you ever are at a convention with him, go to his panels. Actually, the entire Anime World Order crew, they all do great work, great panel stuff. Go see their stuff. Yeah, they were great. Otakon's always a good place for panels. Let's see. AngelXO3 wants to know, if the Ballroom Anime doesn't live up to producers' expectations, are sports shows starring a mixed-gender cast more unlikely to be made? No.
I mean, like, that stuff is up to individual producers and production committees as far as what they take away from a project's success or failure, so you can't tell what they're going to think about anything. But probably not, given that a lot of stuff is produced based on the success or perceived, like, possible success of a manga that they're adapting or a light novel that they're adapting, so... And that's produced independent of them, so it might affect original anime projects, but you got me, who knows. I don't think that they'll take away from that, oh, it was a mixed-gender cast, like, but who knows what they'll take away from it. That's up to the individuals involved in that production committee, so.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how big a hit that manga is, you know? I don't know, maybe they were counting on a manga that had stronger sales, like, I don't know. If it fails, like, oh, shit, we messed up, who knows? Like, it's almost impossible to say what kind of lessons they take
it
from
is,
that.
It is, I don't... So all we know about, because it's early and on enough that like full sales data hasn't come out, but all we know right now is in terms of pre-order sales, Welcome to the Ballroom is not in the top 10 shows of the season.
Oh.
Which is not good.
Okay, you don't got to act like it's this grave prognosis.
No. You're so serious. No, I have a heavy face. I apologize.
You don't have to apologize. I love your face.
Oh, thank you.
Cool. All right, Emily Tuff wants to know, do you think Ikuhara's new anime project has a better chance of finding an audience in a post-Yuri on Ice world? I mean, depends on what the show is.
Oh, the Ikuhara thing.
Yeah. Hopefully he will make something more accessible than... He needs to make something with a slightly more accessible story if he wants to break through a little bit.
He's just not an accessible story maker, dude. I mean, it's surprising.
Man,
that
like he could rein it in a little bit and probably find some success.
He could. I just don't think he will. So, you know.
You should hope that he does.
I do. I mean, you know what? I don't. I kind of want him to make.
Yeah, no, you don't. What a lie.
I hope for the success.
I don't believe any of this for a second.
I have two halves of my heart. One, MAPPA is doing good work, and I respect their ethos as a studio, which not every anime studio has its own ethos, but MAPPA does, much like Bones does. And I respect what they want to do and the kind of projects they want to helm. So for them, I hope that Ikuhara's project is a success. For Ikuhara, I just kind of want to make him to make whatever the fuck he wants to make. If it's bug nuts crazy and people don't understand it and it's just what he wants to make, I will kind of be okay with that because I'm really in tune with that guy's aesthetic and I like what he does and I like peering into his weird brain through his work. So I'm of two minds on it.
Yeah, I feel like someone in the chat says we'll talk more once we know what he's making. That's
yeah,
a good
seriously,
point.
Yeah.
Let's see. Our friend Kyle Cardine, intrepid journalist Kyle Cardine, who literally... This guy was at Otakon.
Mm-hmm.
He had to leave to go to Charlottesville.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he was a journalist, serious journalist. Ganbatte, Kyle. Do you see any attendance differences between U.S.-Japan guest panels this year at Otakon? Is low attendance at Japanese guest panels still an issue? This is just my experience, but the stuff that I saw on the East Coast, they do fill up those rooms a little bit more. But, like, I didn't really notice the panels being all that empty at AX, but nothing was all that empty at AX. Like... Everything was pretty packed. I don't know that super low attendance is as much of an issue as it used to be. Like, you'll still go in and there'll be some disappointments, but, like, so long as you attach the show name to the panel, people will, it seems like people show up. You just gotta have the right talent, the right show name, you know, people show up. You just can't put the guy's just name on there. It's gotta be show name and what they did on the show. That's how you get American fans in.
Right.
And I've been seeing more of that, and hopefully, you know, attendance has been going up, but, like, yeah, I don't know that it's that huge a problem. It, again, you know, it really just depends on the guest and depends on the time of day and all that stuff. So
I feel like, honestly, post social media saturation and internet and stuff like that, I feel like the interest in Japanese creative staff has only grown within anime fandom. Yeah. I don't know how this affects panel attendance.
Well,
but
okay.
As far as,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, as far as individual interest in the Japanese creative side, I feel like that has only increased over the years.
Yeah,
I
totally.
Hope it continues to increase.
Yeah, me too. Someone in the chat mentions that that Maruyama, who was at Otakon, his panel was a little empty. But one thing that's important to note there is he goes to Otakon every year. And so he's a fixture. And so over time, I would imagine the panel will gain less and less. Just as a matter of course, you'll have less and less people showing up because he's there every year. It's kind of a fixture. Mm-hmm. You know, so stuff like that can happen. It really depends on the guest and the show they're attached to, what they're there to promote. Mm-hmm. If you're there to promote Yuri on Ice, you're going to fill your panel, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. Also, I saw on Twitter the other day, I don't know if this is true or not, so don't hold me to it, but someone said that Yuri on Ice is now Hot Topic's number one brand. Mm-hmm. Not anime brand, brand.
I would believe it, because out in the wild, just walking around out in the wild, I see a lot of Yuri on Ice.
Yeah, me too. I
just
see
on,
a ton
just
of
on
it.
Ladies
I see
walking
that, like,
out in
I'm
the meatosphere.
I see that, like, I'm a pork cutlet bowl sticker mm-hmm. everywhere. Like, we live near a college, so obviously you're going to see a little bit more of it, but yeah, I see it a lot. It's great.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, being in that room during AX, the Yuri on Ice panel, it was ear splitting. Like, them screaming during the Welcome to the Madness when they played it, like, the whole room was rumbling. That's how loud they were. The people are crazy about that show, so yeah.
I know that this is Sayo Yamamoto's last convention this weekend. Anime Fest is her last American convention for a while.
Mm-hmm.
She must be very tired.
She seemed tired at AX.
We were supposed to submit interview questions for her, and I just wanted to be like, please use my interview time to take a nap.
Yeah.
Or, like, enjoy, you know. Yeah, just...
Not with the questions I wrote, she won't be taking no nap.
Yeah, well, you wrote some long questions. Okay. Let's see here. Getting down to the end. Custom Zaku, this is our last question. Does anime handle anthropomorphization of beasts, objects, and so on better or worse than Western cartoons in this day and age? Well, first of all, better.
I don't.
So he's
totally
talking about, like, furries and stuff. Anthropomorphization of beasts. So, for animal people.
Oh, I mean.
What's confusing about this?
I'm confused about the question. I mean, like, I think these things.
Does anime handle it better than Western cartoons?
It just depends on what you're looking for, you know?
I find anime furries to be dramatically more palatable than Western furries.
Well, anime...
Like, animal people furries. In anime are, like, cute. They're like Zootopia animals.
Yeah.
Like, they straddle the line between, like, fetishy furry and just, like, cartoon furry. Like,
well,
there's a line,
like,
right?
Well, there's a line. Like, in anime, usually it's either somebody... It's like a kimono...
And I'm not trying to stigmatize furries or anything here. It's just, personally, from what I want out of something, I want the cartoon kind of furry,
not
the sexy furry.
Anime, like, in anime, like... you have, like, the animal people in, like, One Piece and Kimono Friends, and it's just a person just with tails and ears. Like, but it's just a person.
But when I think of beast people in anime, yeah. I think of, like, in fantasy anime, like, beast people.
Oh,
like,
right.
Like, you know, that's what I'm thinking about, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, those are not meant to be sexy. So the ones that are meant to be sexy are just people with tails and ears and stuff, demi-humans. And
right.
And the ones who aren't supposed to be sexy are not sexual. They don't look like DreamWorks animals, you know,
yeah.
Whereas in America, like, they have fully human proportions. It's just that the whole thing is animal parts. And me personally, that's just sort of a fear of mine. Like, some people are scared of clowns. I'm scared of DreamWorks animal people. It's weird to me. So So it just depends on your personal taste, but yeah.
What about The Boss Baby? Are you scared of The Boss Baby?
I never watched that movie because I'm a sane person who doesn't... Like, nope, I don't have to sit through this. I'm not going to do this. You can do that.
You mentioned DreamWorks and Scary, and I just was curious if you were frightened of The Boss Baby.
I never had to sit through that, so I avoided my fear there. I didn't face my fear.
What are you trying to say here?
I'm saying that you punish yourself needlessly with terrible family films.
You're like, and you need to see somebody about it.
I have a line.
Yes, I honestly, yes. If you, my knee-jerk reaction to that is yes. Anthropomorphized stuff in anime is cooler and generally has a better design sensibility than when I see it in Western stuff. I don't think that's particularly controversial or weird or anything. Like I prefer cartoon anime cartoon animals generally look better than Western cartoon animals to me. Depending on obviously everything is we're making generalizations here. Right. I'm just saying. Like, if I think even, like, The Boy and the Beast, all right? Those animal people were good. Those were good animal people.
And that's the thing. Hasoda's designs are the closest to Western.
Yeah, and they looked good.
And it was still not as, yeah.
And they looked good. They looked like children's book characters, mm-hmm. you know, which is more what I'm into. So, like...
My line is, and I've seen this crop up in anime every once in a while, too. So it's not like this is... anime never does this in Western stuff always. It's not like that. But it is much, 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 much less rare in anime. But if I look at something and I'm like, I think the show wants me to beat off to this, I'm out. And in anime, most of the time, they don't want you to beat off to it unless it's a human. If it's an animal, it doesn't look like you're really supposed to beat off to it. But who knows? In Western media, it's like, I am 100% supposed to beat off to this like, Yogi Bear's girlfriend, and I am out. Not doing it.
What, Yogi Bear's girlfriend?
I was referring to that terrible cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. Does anyone in the chat have a question before we wrap up for the day? Thank you all so much for coming by. I really appreciate it. It's been kind of a rough week, so... The fact that y'all came out means a lot to us. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, this person wants our hot Game of Thrones takes.
I'm not following it right now, so...
Game of Thrones is super entertaining. Pretty sure they're going to kill off the Lannisters this season and then fight the Night King and the zombie people next season. And I think the Night King's probably going to take one of the dragons. That'll fuck shit up.
I mean, I just hope it's not...
They've been fucking shit up!
Yeah.
Like, the action scenes are really good. It's going really quick, which is fine. It's very entertaining. That show is pulp. That's what it's there for. It's just entertaining escapism. That's all.
I just hope the ending isn't as predictable as... Because, again, I haven't been following it for a while, but, like, based on the first season, you would assume, like, okay, endgame is Daenerys takes the throne... And Tyrion survives in some capacity as, like, a shadow leader. And the Snows, like, get back together and sort of rejuvenate their land in some way. Like, that would be the most predictable ending. So I hope that's not it.
Well, Jon Snow is a Targaryen. They've been banging that drum for the last, like, three episodes.
You're assuming that.
That's what they're leading to.
Okay. Well, that was something that people predicted a long time ago.
Yeah, right. So that's where it's going.
Are they
going
to bone?
They're related.
Are they going to bone?
Oh, right. It's Game of Thrones.
It's Game of Thrones.
When has that ever stopped?
Nothing.
When has that ever stopped anybody in Westeros?
One. That doesn't mean anything.
What a stupid thing to say, Zach.
So, yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't even care to speculate. It's like... next year you'll get the end. It's going to be like 6 or 7 90-minute episodes. Mm-hmm. It'll be it's fun. That show's a lot of fun.
Right.
I'm enjoying it. Let's see. I think that was it. He wanted your hot Monogatari take, but...
I can say maybe one thing?
All this coyness, I think, is bothering me.
Okay.
We don't need to get the full brunt.
No.
We're trying to not...
One thing I could say. I guess Araragi, if Araragi didn't exist, the show might almost, like, have a premise that was really, really good. But the existence of Araragi as the main character basically destroys any good that the show can produce. Because he's terrible. And everything about him is terrible. Even though, like, oh, I'm so self-sacrificial, but that's only because... it's really dumb. Anyway, it's really, really awful, and I hate it. There we go.
Well, that's close enough.
That's good enough.
I can't stand the main character. It ruins everything.
Yeah. Well, and his perspective. He's right about everything. And everybody else, he's woman saver Araragi, and he just has to respect women. And if he's not around, no one will respect women. And I capitalize respect and women. And there you go. That's the show.
See, I was worried that that's what Rick and Morty was doing. Because Rick is always right about everything, right?
Right.
And that they weren't ever going to start taking his character apart. Mm-hmm. And they totally are. And so season 3 is really good.
That's nice.
It's really good. I was really worried that it was just going to be this self-aggrandizing, like, Reddit man savior, you know, super badass who knows everything and can fix anything and is mega cynical. But no, they're totally taking that character apart. I'm really happy with it. It's good.
That's good. Oh, and the thing that somebody might say, like, oh, well, that's just a lot of escapist otaku stuff. It's not that bad. Like, here's the thing that makes it worse, though. That's not just like, Araragi is the fucking center of the universe secretly. Oh, he's the worst person, but actually the best person. Plus, pedophilia. So there we, like, boom. Like, oh no, it was barely holding together, and then we just put this, like, this little brick says pedo on it, and it suddenly crashes to the ground.
Now, I would say that is a controversial thing to say, but it's not. That is maybe the most common refrain that I have heard about the entire Monogatari series.
Too bad about the pedophilia.
That's what I've heard a lot. That's what I've heard. I'm not gonna sit here and say, like, pretend like that's not what I've heard. That is what I hear about that show.
Right. So, yeah. Bup, 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 bup. There we go.
Anyway. Do we have any other questions from the chat?
We can't end on the brick of pedophilia. Give us another.
We can't end on that. I shouldn't have come back to it.
We would Game of Thrones incest to Monogat's pedophilia.
It's a spicy podcast. It's a spicy podcast.
God damn it.
One more question from the chat. If you, it is long since scrolled past. If you had one, the producer says that Netflix. Oh, so the producer of Attack on Titan, which I'm not sure who said if this was the same producer that I just talked to, said that Netflix will save anime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if he's just talking about production, like, in terms of, like, now we have time and resources to, you know.
He was talking about money, specifically.
Yeah.
That people are just not paid enough in anime to produce things at a clip that's healthy for everybody. I think he was just talking about, like, oh, foreign investment.
Yeah. Which, you know, has been the case for a while. I can't get behind really anything like that because it's... That from his stance, mm-hmm. you have to consider his stance in the industry, and is that true for him?
Yeah.
So it sounds he probably sees it as true for him right now. But if you ask 10 other people in the industry, they're going to have a completely different take on it. It's super early days. Mm-hmm. So what you should do is consider those comments in context with who he is, what he works on, the kinds of shows that he works on, the kinds of projects that he gets hired to make. And consider that position from his context. Mm-hmm. And it's true for him, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true for everybody else in the anime industry or for anybody else in the anime industry. So just take that with a grain of salt. I feel like that's the most responsible thing that I can really say about that right now. Anyway, I think that's a pleasant enough thing to end on as opposed to all this negativity. You got to keep it.
I didn't...
Got to keep it.
Look, I present negativity very positively. I like, you know.
What?
We can have fun with our negativity.
No, you... Okay.
We can have fun with our negativity.
This show is over. Thank you very much, everybody, for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, all those things. Right here on YouTube. Click like and subscribe. We love you very much for doing that. Thank you to the live chat for stopping by. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye-bye, everyone. We'll